Channel 5 in future, as he'll give everything away. Folks, this week we're on Good Life, Good Enough. And we're on it because I suppose it's the most common question or misunderstanding about the Christian life there is. I was in a hospital last week up at Hackney, nothing wrong with me. We were doing some meetings there. And the first question I got asked at the end of one talk went like this. Are you saying that if I try my best, then I'll get to heaven? And I simply quote it to you because it is in one form or another precisely what everyone thinks Christianity is all about. I just opened a Christian newspaper before I came over here, and I saw in the letters column there was a letter, and one of the letters was complaining about the programs they hear, the services that appear on BBC Radio. They said the content of some of them is fair enough, but most of them seem to be saying nothing more than be good. Well, I said to the nurse who said, if I try my best, will I get into heaven? I said, well, first of all, of course, you don't. But secondly, I turned her to the story we're going to look at today. It's not just that we don't try our best, of course, it's missing the point. And if you'll pick up the Luke's Gospels and turn to page 68, you'll discover the story of the Pharisee and the tax collector. And it's a story about two people who come into church to pray. There are two stereotypes, and the story is told to tell us who will be found just or who will be vindicated at the end of the day. The answer, by the way, was such a bolt from the blue that Luke is softening the blow even before the story starts. See, verse 9 goes like this. To some who are confident of their own righteousness and look down on everybody else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee. Now, for his hearers, the moment they heard there was a Pharisee in the story, especially when they heard the other person was a tax collector, they knew the end. For us, the moment we hear there's a Pharisee in the story, we really do know what the end will be. But our expectations are radically different from theirs. All the surprise of this story has gone now, I'm afraid, because the Pharisees have had such a bad press. Look how it goes on. I might as well give the ending away, because it won't be a surprise. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you I'm not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He wouldn't even look up to heaven, but he beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified by God. Well, if we're going to understand the flavor of the story as Jesus told it, we're going to have to do a good PR job on the poor Pharisees. We'll have to bring Saatchi and Saatchi in. We'll have to polish up their image. We'll have to recover the surprise if you're going to understand what Jesus is teaching in this story. See, as I put in the notes on the blue sheet, it's a story about an insider who found himself out. He was a Pharisee. He wasn't a clergyman. He wasn't paid to be religious. But he was far more than a Sunday-only Christian. He would have been at everything. He'd have come along Thursday lunchtime to Channel 5 without any problem. He'd have been fairly useless because Channel 5 is set up for those who aren't good enough for God, and he thought God wasn't interested in anyone who wasn't good enough for him. But he'd have been here, regular as clockwork, every Thursday. And look at what he can say of himself. We've got no great reason to doubt him. Jesus isn't saying, actually, you can see he's lying through his teeth when he talks like this. No, Saatchi and Saatchi wouldn't have their job, wouldn't find it too difficult, would they, to tell us how much we need a Pharisee. God, I thank you I'm not like other men. I'm not a robber. Literally, the word's got the sense of snatching away. You can see how a robber, can't you? I don't know if you've ever been mugged, or you've had your handbag snatched, or your pocket picked. But if you have, you'll have wished you'd bumped into a Pharisee. Your belongings would have been safe. See, if you want a cure for city scandals, whether they're in Lloyd's or the Stock Exchange or whichever merchant bank is going to suffer next, there's a simple cure, isn't there? Just get more Pharisees into the city, then we'll have less scandals. Because they're not robbers. I thank God I'm not an evildoer, he says. And again, the force of the word is someone who's unjust. He's saying, I don't handle power, whatever power I have, corruptly. Oh, we long for that in society, don't we? I mean, those policemen and that policewoman who are just going on trial, they were brought up yesterday, weren't they, for the Whopping incidents. And now if they're found guilty, it'll be because they handled what power they'd got corruptly in some form or another. See, put a Pharisee on the beach and we'll end all those problems. I thank God I'm not an adulterer. Well, I can't remember where I dragged this statistic up from, but they're being thrown at you from all directions, aren't they? That in the 50 plus years that the Marriage Guidance Council has been set up, divorces have risen from 5,000 a year to over 144,500 a year. Not all of them, obviously, are from adultery. But think of the agony that would have been spared. The deceit lessened. The hurts we'd have not had to face if sexual fidelity had been the norm. Pharisees. Every marriage needs them. And not just marriage or society, but the church as well. See, of the two men who are in the synagogue that day, why, in the temple, it's the Pharisee who knows his way around. He's got all the confidence of the old hand, hasn't he? And his spirituality has led him to something more than nominal religion. Look at verse 12. He says, I fast twice a week. Twice a week. The law only told him he had to do it once a year on the Day of Atonement, but he's going to do it twice a week. It must be brilliant for his diet. But it's quite tough to keep it, isn't it? You know, there's no nominal Christianity here, is there? There's not someone who's just playing at it and wanting to do the socially acceptable thing. I mean, I don't know whether you know it or not. It actually happens to be Lent. I don't know what you've given up, but have you given up food 2 days a week? Just for 40 days to sort of rival the Pharisee? Well, you know, you needn't look proud by putting your hand up, but I doubt if any of us are keeping our hands down for that reason. Do we take our religion as seriously as him? Now, he's serious about it. You see, he gives a tenth of all I get. Well, the law said there were certain crops that had to be tithed. But the Pharisees used to do it right down to garden herbs. They were quite determined that God wasn't going to miss out on anything. See, tithing is 10%. Now, let's stick to the denomination I know, but the recent report says that the Church of England receives 2% of members' net income. Can't you see the treasurer's praying for more Pharisees in the congregation? I mean, it would be five times the annual budget would be increased. See, Pharisees, every church should have them, particularly when the collection bag goes round. Now, what I'm trying to say seriously is this. We've got to face the verdict on the Pharisee, not in the light of some nominal lip service only Christianity, but a man whose religion has so gripped him that it had a major moral impact on his life. This man's religion has affected his greed, his sexual activity, his handling of money. It's affected him from his stomach to his honesty. It's touched his deepest passions. Now, do you begin to understand the shock when you come to verse 14 and discover he was out? I tell you, says Jesus, this man, the tax collector, rather than the Pharisee, went home justified before God. Well, you say, if that's the case, what on earth went wrong, and what hope is there for the rest of us? Well, there is hope.
Let's look at his mistake. It is actually quite obvious, and Luke wants to make it clear to us. So look at verse 9 again. To some who are confident of their own righteousness and look down on everybody else. His mistake was the mistake of comparison, comparing himself with other people. You see, he stood up, he prayed about himself, God, I thank you, I'm not like other men. And I say it is the easiest mistake in the book. That if I want to know how good I am, I look around at someone else and I work out what I'm like by comparing myself with them. It is a very comforting game. I'll tell you what it leads to. Well, I'll tell you what it led this Pharisee to. It led him to a very narrow view of righteousness. See, as someone pointed out, what you've got here is a list of negative virtues and minor pieties. I can have a look around, can't I? And I can always find the office fraud or the office, well, I don't know, whatever you like to call him or her, but the person who is really the pits in the office. And I can quickly start patting myself on the back, can't I, that I am not like them. I don't do whatever it is. And it's a very small step once I've started doing that to thinking, therefore I must be good. But you see, true righteousness, true love, true goodness, true mercy is far more than not being a robber, an adulterer, and an evildoer, isn't it? This comparison game gave the Pharisee a very narrow view of what it meant to be good, to be righteous. This comparison game meant that he was very quickly full of himself. The word I occurs four times in these two short verses of his prayer. It's all he can talk about. He seemed to think he could say, God, look how good I am. You ought to be very pleased with me. And he forgot what God thinks of the smug and the self-satisfied. But you see, that's what happens if actually that's how I'm looking. You know, I take Jono over there, bad luck Jono, and I sort of think to myself, well, there we are, I'm not like him. You're quite grateful I'm not like him. No, I'm quite grateful. Well, anyway, he's quite grateful he's not like me. But I'm saying I'm not like him. And I immediately start preening myself, don't I, on all the ways in which I'm not like him. And I'm immediately focusing on me. You know, we can all find some good point we've got, or at least some point at least which we're not as bad as someone else. It's the supreme irony, isn't it, of this man's religion, that it leads him to thinking more about himself than God, and it is actually the disgusting face of religion. I just want to warn us, it is very easy to play the comparison game. I suspect it's at the heart of all of us. You see people doing it on the big scale, don't you? The kind of single-issue politicians do it. It's terribly, terribly easy to take the high moral ground over, you know, whatever the issue may be, whether it's apartheid or the fur trade or some latest environment issue. It's very easy on a single issue to take the high moral ground and you ignore all the other areas where you've got the low moral ground. Now, friends, we all do it. You see something on the television and you pat yourself on the back that you're not like them. We can play the game over the Ayatollah at the moment, can't we? But fancy us doing it. We should know better. We're not a patch on the Pharisee. And it got him nowhere. Unless your righteousness exceeds that of the Pharisees, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven, said Jesus. The insider who found himself out. Over the page on the blue notices, the outsider who found himself in. See, this is the tax collector. Now, he was a robber. Because in those days, that's the way he made his money. It was, a bit like privatization. be disastrous, wouldn't it, if they privatized the inland revenue. But if you wanted to collect the taxes, you put in your bid, you were given an allotted area, you had to raise that much taxes for the governor, and the way you made your profit was by raising money over and on top. So I just fleeced you for all I could get. Yeah, he would have been a robber. He would have been unjust. He would have been an evildoer. The tax collector was a traitor because he was working for the occupying powers. He would make everyone pay over the odds. And the tax collector stood at a distance. He was in a class of his own, and he knew it. That is the striking thing about it. He wasn't used to church. He would have no doubt been hesitant as he came in. He'd have looked around. He'd have wondered quite what you were meant to do when you come into the temple. And we're told he kept his distance. He kept his distance from the Pharisee, the obvious chosen one of God. I don't know whether you feel uncomfortable in church, whether you don't think you're really quite in the same league as some of the others who saunter in here and have been week after week. Well, I have something very important for you this lunchtime as you look at this man, the tax collector. See, he's not much of a prayer. His is far shorter, isn't it? He didn't have the language. It's rather frightening, isn't it, when people start praying and you wonder, is that what I'm meant to do? He's got his head down. He wouldn't even look up to heaven. And he goes on beating his breast. And he says, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Actually, literally, it's God, have mercy on me, the sinner. He really is in a class of his own. He's as distanced from the rest of humanity in his own mind as the Pharisee is distanced from the rest of humanity in his mind. Anyway, whereas the Pharisee thought he was above everyone else, this tax collector knows he's right at the bottom of the pile. And he says, God, have mercy. And the idea is, God, let your anger be removed from me. Now, understand that thought, will you? See, even as he looks for mercy, he knows what he's deserved. He's saying far more than just, God, I've blown it. I imagine many of us have said that to God before now, haven't we? We've said, God, I've blown it over this issue because even we've had to face up to it. And as we say it, you know, there's so often this little PS, but normally I'm quite good. No, he's saying, God, I've blown it completely and I deserve your condemnation. But have mercy on me. Please remove your anger from me. It's a prayer of true dependence. It's a prayer of true desperation. It's a prayer of true repentance. There is no other way in which he can escape unless God is merciful. And he says, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. See how personal it is? It's not just on all of us, it is on me personally. And he's in. He's in. He would have been as shocked as anyone to have heard Jesus' verdict in verse 14. I tell you, this man went home justified with God. This man went home right with God. He's found the key to getting right with God. The key isn't doing wrong. Don't please learn that lesson from this story. No, it's not that. The key is sincerely, humbly, throwing himself on the mercy of God. See, the Pharisee gave 6 reasons why God ought to act for him. I'm not like other men. I don't do this, 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 and I do this and that. So God, the tax collector gave 1 reason why God must act for him. I'm a sinner. And if you don't act for me, God, I'm sunk. And he's in. And there's hope, therefore, for anyone who repents. The insider who found himself out. The outsider who found himself in. Well, point three is the thoroughly unsubtle one on the blue sheets. Which surprise for you? Because Jesus wasn't just telling the story as a matter of information. You know, well, I mean, here's a nice issue for us to discuss. Just as the girl in the hospital wasn't asking the question that way, as it turned out. She's wanting to know, are you telling me I've got to try my best? Well, Jesus says, listen, for people who think they're doing their best and therefore think they're a lot better than other people, here's a story to make you realize that's not the way you ever make it. It was an ugly surprise for the Pharisee, wasn't it? He thought himself in and discovered he was out. It was a remarkable surprise for the outsider. He discovered he could be in. You see, unless we'll switch from the doing my best, unless we'll switch from the list of our virtues, we'll have to face the ugly surprise. Don't think that the Pharisees have disappeared because they're a first century phenomenon. They're not. It's a classic sort of British view of religion. There's always something of the same pride about it, isn't it? The person who likes to think that in the end they might be good enough to get into God's heaven. There is an arrogance behind that. That really thinks I can land up in heaven saying, yes, of course, I deserve to be here. Now, the Christian's meant to have a certainty as to where he's going, but it's not ever based on the fact that he deserves or she deserves to be there. Tell you, said Jesus, the tax collector rather than the Pharisee went home justified before God. Well, they both went home, one right with God, one not. Here's the end, isn't it, by the way, of all talk of everyone really being Christians at heart, you know, and it'll all be okay for all of us in the end. That isn't the way Jesus ends his stories. Now notice this. He finishes off like this. He draws a general conclusion, doesn't he? He says, everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. Everyone who humbles himself will be exalted. See how dangerous it is to think that I might just possibly be good enough for God. Everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. See what an insensitive it is to see myself as I am and throw myself on God's mercy. He who humbles himself will be exalted. Sorry isn't told to say, wouldn't it be nice if God was really like that? It's told to tell us he is. Jesus came to reveal to us that we don't have a God who's out to get us. This isn't a mere story. It's not just promises, promises. See, if you turn over a page, you'll discover in here at the beginning of the next chapter, the story of a real life tax collector. But that's next week's story. Today? Well, today, before we all go not home but to the offices, we'd better decide how we're going back. What surprise awaits us? That's the coffee question. Thanks for listening.